Welcome everybody to the Skill Development Playbook Podcast. I am your host, Coach TJ, and today we have season 3, episode number 17. And I'm actually going to do a rebroadcast. In season 2, I interviewed Jay Hernandez of the Orlando Magic, and we talked about skill development and his philosophy and just kind of about his journey. But now Jay, at this present moment, is actually the assistant coach for the Charlotte Hornets. So we're going to get into it. I'm gonna play this rebroadcast, and just so you can kind of hear, like I said, about his journey and what he do and what he agrees with, what he doesn't agree with. But I think this is really, really informative. You're going to get a chance to learn about some skill development from an NBA coach that actually started at the local level and then worked his way up to the highest level. So this is the rebroadcast of an interview I did with Jay Hernandez of the Charlotte Hornets. Coach, are you ready to drop some knowledge for everyone that's listening today?
I'm going to try, definitely. I appreciate you having me on.
That's no problem. I appreciate you being here. Why don't you give everybody that's listening a little bio about yourself? Tell them how you got started in skill development and how you worked your way to being an assistant coach with the Orlando Magic.
Yeah, I've been involved with working with players back since 1998. I was actually playing college basketball at Hofstra University in Long Island, New York, under Coach Jay Wright, who's currently with Villanova now. And we had a good team. You know, we had a couple guys that went pro, and I was fortunate while in college to start assisting my father, who was actually doing some basketball training at a local facility, basketball facility. And at the time, basketball training in New York, you know, really wasn't a thing, and you know, really was something that a lot of people didn't understand at that time. You know, a lot of guys in New York you know, have that bravado, that cockiness, like, you know, I'm already nice, what do I need somebody, what am I going to pay somebody to train me for? You know, so it was something that was different. So early on, it was happened to be a lot of kids that parents had money, you know, that understood, you know, what it was to have a pitching coach or, you know, a boxing trainer or whatever the case may be, that could help people with their skill level. And so that's kind of how it started. I was just helping out with my dad, and I had a little reputation in the area. We had gone to the NCAA tournament, and there was a buzz about what we were doing at the college level. So it helped me gain the attention of the younger kids, and I just enjoyed it. And then as time progressed, I started getting my own clients, and you know, just started figuring out what were the best ways to teach these young players. You know, and since a lot of them had a hard time, you know, with you know, being able to make moves or do things in a game, you know, we broke it down to the basics and said, all right, can we break down you know, your footwork without the basketball? Can we come up with basically techniques that will help you, you know, and knowing when to use certain moves, and then also breaking down stuff with terminology, just like you have in school. So we had certain things, certain packages that had terminology attached to it, and we saw kids getting better, and just really from there, you know, people would see me work on these side baskets, and you know, as games were going on, and they'd start coming over and saying, yeah, so, you know, I've been coming here for a few weeks, saw what you did, and I'd like to get my son involved. And, you know, just really progressed rather quickly from there. As I got out of college, I started thinking about what I wanted to do, and I ended up taking a job at Hofstra. Then I ended up going to pharmaceutical sales for 2 years with the Johnson & Johnson company. But what was happening was more of my time was being taken over by basketball training, and I was finding myself trying to get out of work early, you know, spending my Saturdays and Sundays doing all day working, and talked to my wife and said, listen, I think this is what I want to do full time. And ended up going to play in Puerto Rico. I'd done a few seasons there. I went there and played, and I knew when I came back I'd had some summer camps and things that also had set up, and then I figured we had about a six-month window to try to make it work full-time. And so it was definitely something that was a calculated risk. I was fortunate to have a wife that was backing me on that, because I basically took a big hit, you know, going from a job that was very stable, you know, gas card, car, you know, commission, salary, you know, you name it. It was a good situation, and I said, you know what, I don't feel like that's me. I wanted to do basketball full-time, and it afforded me the opportunity to say that when people came, this is who I am, this is what I'm about, and if you need me to come work with you in Philly at 8 o'clock in the morning, I'll be there, you know. So it was something that I took very seriously, and luckily I never had to look back. So yeah. You know, that's where we are.
And that tells and that shows your passion, you know, for it. I think some of the better coaches are the ones that are really passionate about it. You know, you took a chance, but you knew this is something that you wanted to do. And I was in somewhat of a similar situation with my training. But, you know, it's, you know, I've actually kind of followed you for a while. I remember seeing some of the things that you were doing with Wally Szczerbiak back in the
yeah.
day. And so then went on to Kemba Walker and things like that. So I've always admired what you've done. I've liked what you've done. So that's why I was really really wanted to get you on to kind of pick your brain and share some of your information with my audience. So, Coach, let's get right into it. The first question I have is, what's your definition of skill development and how important is it to the game of basketball?
My definition of skill development are basically skills that you develop, you know, off court, you know, not only basketball wise, but obviously movement related, things of that nature. You'll hear me talk a lot about movement. But I just think it's skills that you develop that can help you on court, not only for yourself, but, you know, to help your team overall win, you know. So that to me is really the ultimate in skill development. It's got to be applicable skills that you can utilize in games that help you, you know, become a better basketball player and help your team win.
Yeah, game relevant is really important. I'm sure you've seen a lot of different stuff. I've seen it. People that really put together drills that really can't translate over into a game situation. I try to tell players and coaches a lot, just, you know, just because you see something that looks really cool, you know, you got to figure out a way of how it can apply to a game situation. How can you take this skill and make it to where it could be relevant to the player or for that player in a game situation? So is
yeah,
that,
and that's
no, go ahead. No, you go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was gonna say, you know, from that standpoint, it's true. You know, you got to understand why you're using certain drills and what kind of progressions you're doing within those drills to lead it up to, you know, being able to get your shot off quicker or to be able to blow by a defender. You know, so there's definitely you know, drills that are specific. Like, you know, as time progressed, you know, I still do some unique things, but there were definitely. I was doing a whole lot more, you know, two ball, three ball type stuff, you know, I would say 14, 15 years ago than I do today. But, you know, now with some of the stuff that I do, it's to try to get my players to understand this is a challenge that we're trying to get you to get past. So, because it's going to help you with hand-eye coordination, your ball dexterity, whatever the case may be. So I love the two ball juggle drills for the sake of being able to catch and throw and then eventually taking you into the freeze pull-up series. So, you know, good progressions there. And then within that, you know, we talk a lot about thinking and drilling. And I think a lot of times what guys do, they're used to just using cones. And so they'll do a bunch of variations, you know, three between cone, you know, between behind, next cone. And it's good because they're getting a lot of reps. But there's no aspect of actually thinking and drilling. And that's important to me as well, you know, from a youth level all the way up to the pro level. Because the biggest differentiating factor, you know, is the mindset, you know, how quick you can read and react, you know, see situations. So, you know, we try to incorporate a lot more of that as well.
Yeah. Because I know sometimes I may see a drill and it may seem a little bit different to me. But what I've told coaches on this podcast is sometimes you don't really know the reason behind that drill. You know,
right.
It's easy for me to go on YouTube and see a drill and say, oh, man, this drill is really cool. This is really good. I want to incorporate that drill. But I know that from a professional standpoint, especially with like certain players, NBA players, you know that player's skill set. You know exactly what they need to work on. You know exactly what areas they need to improve in. So when you're doing a drill, it's specific for that player. And I think a lot of times, you know, coaches will see that and they just want to copy that drill instead of really looking at it and evaluating and saying, okay, I see what this person is doing, but, you know, can I actually really use this drill with my bigs or with my point guards or with my wing players?
Yeah, without a doubt. And that's the thing. It's you make a good point, and it comes down to the drills and also the equipment that you use. It's you know, it's a lot of times. You know, I remember when I had my business, people would ask me, "Well, this train over here has the Vertimax, and you don't have the Vertimax." And you know, I think the piece of equipment is great, but if somebody's only coming in to me one time a week, you know, and we're doing an hour, it's supposed to be skill development, I'm not putting your kid on a 30-minute Vertimax session, and then getting you on a court to do something. You know, it's just, to me, it's defeating the purpose of this skills, because the kid can't make a layup, you know, or they don't have, you know, the proper technique to get their shot off. So, you know, I would always explain that, like, you know, you're here for a reason. You know, obviously there's other people that have different pieces of equipment that's great for them. I'm going to tell you why I don't have that equipment. And I've always been, you know, big on being able to utilize what I can with the time that I have. And that's important. You know, it's just because something is cool from a drill standpoint or a piece of equipment standpoint, you know, sometimes you feel like you're being left behind because I'm not doing this or that. But there is something to be said for, you know, getting kids the basics of basketball and being able to do certain things, because if they can't do those, then, you know, the other stuff serves no purpose for you. You know, it's if you got a 40-inch vertical, we get you up to 40 and a half, and you can't make an open jump shot, you know, you might as well go do track and field.
Right. So we see a lot of different things with skill development, some good, some bad. Is there one thing that you would like to change or improve about skill development?
You know, it is, obviously there's, what I'm excited about now about skill development is that it's come a long way. You know, like I said, from when I started, you know, people were like, why do I need that, to probably 5 years after, people asking me, seeing a player, saying, well, where do they train? You know, trying to figure out, you know, what kids are doing and what NBA guys are doing, type stuff. So that's cool. Seeing it at the NBA level, seeing Earl Watson, who obviously played the game, you know, was in the D League and then was a player development coach just last year. He got promoted to interim head coach, and now he's taken over. That's great to see that pathway. It's great to see Kenny Atkinson in Brooklyn, you know, who was a great player in Europe and, you know, had a great reputation for developing talent and players. And now he's a head coach. So similar to what we saw with Spoelstra and other coaches going through the film room, and getting their recognition that way, I think now player development's getting more of a reputation for guys who know how to relate to players and, you know, can see the game, you know, from a lot of different you know, avenues. And that's exciting to me, because I think for a while there it got to a point where at the NBA level it's more of a stepping stone position, kind of a glorified rebounder or holding position for guys to get to, you know, the coaching ranks. And, you know, I think now, you know, me coming into Orlando a few years back, I was like, all right, I want to expand that role. You know, whatever that role is in Orlando, I want to go in and do some things that are different, unique from my experiences of running my own business and being an entrepreneur for so many years. So from that standpoint, it's great. You know, I would say from a skill development standpoint, I think what we're talking about is like guys just, you know, kind of going on social media and just showing the same thing over and over again and copying it. And then the other thing is with that is in the coaching ranks, what's done all the time is there's credit for certain things. So if you see certain things, you know, you kind of say, hey, you know, I got this from Coach K, you know, and people are okay saying that. I got this from Coach Wright or whatever the case may be, you know. So there's certain, I think, unique things that have come up over the years. I think that's one thing where, from a training standpoint, I think it's good to say, hey, I've got this drill from such and such, and, you know, this is, you know, what it does, or this is, you know, how it helps you improve, which is great. You know, I'd like to see, you know, a little bit more of that, and I'd like to see more, I think, continuity from a standpoint of, you know, trainers maybe sharing that information or sharing, you know, having some kind of I don't want to say certification or anything like that, because I think there's a lot of guys that license out what they do, and I think there's some really, really good trainers. But I think the problem that I think skill development has from our standpoint is you know, people look at it and say, well, it's kind of like an unregulated industry. You
right.
know, it's an industry right. where yeah. anybody can do it. Anybody who ever picked up a basketball and you know, can do a couple of flashy moves now is a basketball trainer. So I think that's where, you know, I'd like to see the level continue to get raised. I'm excited that more and more people see it as an avenue to, you know, to hopefully make money and see it as a career. But, you know, on the flip side, I don't want it to get watered down either, you know, because I think there's been so much headway made.
Yeah. And the comment you made about the certification is you hear that a lot, because there's so many people, like you say, if you play basketball, even if it's just through middle school, and you know a couple of moves, you can throw up a cheap website and make some flyers, and next thing you know, you're doing basketball training. So it would be nice to be able to have something, you know, and I guess it'd have to come from somebody that's way smarter than I am to figure that out. But, you know, you know, so
I think it could be you know, USA Basketball, because, you know, again, it's everything's affected, right? If it's not mm-hmm. done properly at the grassroots level, you know,
right.
it ends up affecting, you know, each level, like college and pro. Yeah, so I think it's important, potentially for whether it's Team USA, you know, the USA national team, you know, NBA, you know, college, you get everybody involved at the higher levels, and then,
right.
you know, be able to bring in independent trainers, you know, like yourself, to come in and share their experience. I think it's got to be a wide range, you know, that way you can put a curriculum in place. And that's not to be said, you know, that to me doesn't mean that you don't, you know, have your individuality and bring your own flavor to what you're trying to do. But I think it's definitely helpful, you know, if you can put a package together where people understand, you know, all the rules, you know, from each level, and understand the terminology. So if you're trying to get somebody from high school, college, or college to the pro, you know, what are some of the terminology? Because I know I learned a whole lot when I first got into the league, and it took me a little bit of time, you know, to kind of make that adjustment. So I think it's important to, you know, have all those facets and all those different backgrounds kind of mesh together to put a curriculum together that says, hey, this is just a framework. But if you've studied this, and, you know, just like people who get their CSCS certification, you know, different things where they really have to study, they have to, you know, take a written test, they have to do, you know, the actual physical stuff, and, you know, they also, you know, have to, you know, basically stay accredited and continue to, you know, do things and take courses over a year or two, you know, to keep them on track with, you know, everything that's going on, then I think that's important as well. You know, just you see the different facets in terms of what's going on in Europe, what's going on here,
mm-hmm.
and I think there's a lot to be said about both. You know, we still have the best players in the world, and, you know, the best team in the world. So, I know a lot of people make a big deal about the European players are coming in here and, you know, doing what they're doing, and it's great. You know, it's the game is global now, so I think it's but it doesn't mean that what's going on isn't right here in the States either. You know, I know there's some flaws, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's still a reason why we have the best team and the best players. I just think it's I think we can learn now from what's going on there as well. You know, it's not, you know, they've taken a lot from us, and I think it's just that, you know, being able to collaborate and say, okay, well, you know, maybe they're not pigeonholing kids who are happen to be 5'10", you know, 12 years old, and put them on the block and never develop their skill set, and the kid ends up being 6'1". So,
yeah.
you know, yeah. I think it's, you know, those are the kind of things, I think, where they do a much better job in terms of spacing, flow, and passing and moving, and not pigeonholing kids based on height, you know, in Europe. But, you know, from a standpoint of individual skill development, I think you're seeing, you know, that they're starting to embrace that as well. And a lot of the guys that I've had over the years, whether it was through pre-draft or even on our current team, you know, it's something that a lot of those guys aren't used to, is you know, having that one-on-one attention and saying, hey, this is how, you know, we're going to pick up the ball, you know, to get into your shot. This is, you know, we're going to change the line here. We're going to do this, and it's something unique for them as well when they get that. So I think when you couple both of those things together, you know, you can have a deadly combination.
So we hear a lot about skill development in the off season. You know, we tell players all the time, you know, players are made in the summer. But discuss how important skill development is during the in season. How it's important for players to keep their skills sharp, to stay on top of their game. How they should get in the extra shooting and things like that. And I know in season, skill development is not going to be the same as offseason, but just kind of discuss how important it is for maybe even the youth player down at the high school level, for the college players, and even at the pro level.
Yeah, it's truly important. You know, when I had my business in New York, it was we called them maintenance workouts, and we wanted players to not take that time off. You know, to say, okay, well, I'm practicing five times a week or four times a week, playing twice a week, and I'm not going to have any time to basically devote to my skills. So we tried to make it that on an off day, you know, we would just do maintenance workouts, and if there was something that was bothering them, if there was something that maybe they had a hard time with, breaking a press break, shooting, anything that maybe they feel like, all right, I need to do better next time when I see that team, or when I face that situation, we would try to go over it. Obviously, just keeping your handles tight and your shot sharp, so that, like I said, once you're in season, it's geared towards, what the team needs to get done. And so I think a majority of teams and coaches, do not spend a lot of time on just individual skill work. It becomes more team-based drills, layups, and different passing drills into, whatever you need to work on, from a team standpoint. So I think it's important that, players get in, whether it's a half hour, like even at our level, we're constantly traveling. There's a lot of games and when we're practicing. So we try to get guys into a routine of coming in, a half hour before practice starts to get whatever they want to get in, whether it's just back to the basket stuff, free throws, different things like that. And we obviously have access to the guys a little bit more, but we just try to figure out where guys are, in terms of how they're feeling, and some areas that we can focus on. And it's not just on court, it's obviously being able to watch film with guys, break down some of that stuff and say, hey, here, take a look at these last five clips of the game, where you are, where your spacing is, things like that, that can help them, in terms of overall skill development. I think that's part of it as well. So we said the off-court stuff is important for them, to look at and to understand, what might arise for them coming into the next situation, how they're going to guard the pick and roll, what openings you might have, what plays that we might be running that might work best for you against that matchup or against that team. To me, being able to stay sharp, maintain everything that you worked on in the off season, it becomes a lot more concentrated, at that point. So what we try to do in the off season is really focus on overall skills and not necessarily box in, okay, we're going to focus just strictly on a one dribble pull up for the next, 6 months. But we try to get, develop overall skills, and then we start to hone it in as we start to get into training camp. Once we start getting, the actual plays that we're going to be running, things of that nature, then we start, designing the workouts to fit, where players are going to get shots on the court, what their role is going to be throughout the season. And then once they're in season, it becomes, basically trying to adjust to, how they're playing, what their role is, and what we need to get accomplished. So, it's definitely a adjustment period for each time of the year, just like you would adjust the level of intensity or conditioning that you do based on what time of year you're in.
Yeah, and I think with technology now, with services like Huddle and Crossover for the youth coaches, being able to see, and youth coaches and high school coaches, being able to use film as a way to help with your skill development is really big. So just like you were saying, if you can show your players a few clips, show them some things, that some areas they need to work on, and then you can go out and spend, 20, 30 minutes on tightening up those skills, that'll really help during season. I try to get players to understand, when you're coming in, like you say, you have four or five practices a week, you're playing once or twice a week, we don't need to come in and have a long, hard, drawn-out individual one-on-one or small group session. We just need to tighten some things up, keep you sharp. So you won't overwork yourself, and just kind of keep things going and keep it sharp. So what advice would you give players and parents and coaches when it comes to skill development?
In terms of I would say I'll start with coaches or even trainers, since it's a skill development podcast. I'm going to say for trainers, I think it's important. One of the major things that from each level would be to see if you can have some kind of level of communication with coaches that actually dictate playing time, you know, and be able to see exactly what they think the player needs and be a resource to that coach. I think a lot of times it becomes a situation where, you know, coaches end up not liking, you know, certain trainers because they just don't know what they're doing, you know, or players are coming in and say, this is what I've been working on with my trainer, you know, and I've been paying X amount of dollars for the last 6 months, and, you know, I've got that step back down, coach, you know, and coach is looking at it like, no, I don't need that, you know.
Yeah,
so it's
right.
I think it's, you know, I think I don't think it should, you know, depending on what a coach is looking for, it shouldn't deter trainers from doing what they do, because trainers are looking out for the best interest of that player to be an overall better player, you know, not just to be stuck into a role, you know. But eventually, you know, coaches are the ones dictating playing time, so they're the ones that are ultimately, I guess, right, you know, from a standpoint of, you know, you're gonna have to do what you need to do to get on the court for them. So I think that's helpful, you know, as I started getting more and more players, I was able to, you know, start talking to guys in the NBA about what they wanted to see from their players over the summer if they were working out with me. And you know, I think that was just helpful for me, you know, to develop relationships, and then it was helpful for me to see what they were thinking about, and I could have a good conversation with that player and say, okay, well, coach is looking, you know, for these things. Let's start to incorporate these one or two things throughout these workouts, and then we're going to continue to develop in these areas as well, you know. And I think when you have those lines of communication open, I think it just helps everybody. You know, from parents, I would say, you know, just, you know, let the kid enjoy themselves. If they're enjoying training and they want to go to train, I would say spend your money, you know, and then let the trainers do their job. I think that relationship that a trainer and a player can build is really special, and I think it should be an area where a player feels comfortable, you know, being honest with the trainer, feels comfortable making mistakes without having mom or dad sit there, you know, and barking from the sideline.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, I think that's a big thing. And I think even with my daughter who plays now, you know, I've been ultra laid back with her, I think, from what I've seen over the years, because I just didn't want to be that parent that forced their kid to do anything. I wanted them, if they were going to decide to do something, it has to be 100%. I don't care what it is. So I think it's important for parents to, you know, once they have that trust that, okay, this is somebody that I'm going to invest in, you know, for my kid, and then let them do their job. So I think that's very important, you know, and it goes for everything. And I think once parents figure that out, I think you're going to see, you know, players blossom that much more. I think they can reach optimal potential, you know, when that's the case. And then from a player standpoint, I think it's important for them to put it all together. Like I said, to be able to, it's hard to, but to be able to self-assess situations, you know, where they are from a standpoint of, you know, their team, playing-wise, AAU, high school, what they're trying to accomplish, and you know, if their work is matching up with, you know, the goals that they have in mind. You know, I think a lot of players would always say, well, I want to go here, and you know, I would say, okay, well, you're going into your junior year. Have you had any conversations or calls, you know, from anybody at the low D1, mid-major D1? And no, I haven't. You know, have you had anything from D2? Nope. Any D3? Yeah, I've talked to 3 or 4 coaches. You know, so I think players need to understand where they are in that scope. You know, just because, you know, you think you can play somewhere doesn't mean that that's what's going to happen. So
true.
I think
true.
Being able to assess, I always tell our players, because we had some outstanding players that just weren't being recruited who I felt were low D1 or felt that were a Division II player that weren't getting the looks, and I was trying to help them out. But, you know, I always tell them it's not about the level of play, it's a level of player. You know, and I've played, you know, some of the best players I've played against or played with happen to be Division III All-Americans who, in my mind, would have been fine playing, you know, at any level. But just it's just a numbers game, and sometimes guys, you know, they develop later in life or mature. So I think it's important for people to understand, players to understand that, you know, and then not take it, you know, to a point where, you know, they're looking at you like, well, I thought you thought I was, you know, going to be a Division II or Division I player and get a scholarship. And, you know, I may believe that, but, you know, it's what's happening out there when you're playing, you know, and what certain people are seeing. So I think it's important for players to be able to assess where they are, you know, and decide, is this something that I want to continue to do? And if it is, I can't just work out with TJ once a week and think that's enough, you know, because it's really the time that you take on your own, you know, and say, okay, I learned this week. I want to keep applying that, because it's very easy to see when you do something within a minute, players can figure out the pattern and they start to get better.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So if you take that 1 minute and you do that over the course of the next week on your own, then a week later, you should be a lot better at that drill. But if you're coming back and then you look the same, then you know that kid just doesn't have, you know, what it takes to really get to the highest level,
right?
Because they're just not investing their own time. They don't have that passion, you know, to get better on their own. And that goes for everything. You know, if you're going to get vocal lessons and you're not singing in the shower, or you're not, you know, creating your own music, then, mm-hmm. you know, how passionate are you really about it? So I think that's important for players to understand too, is like, all right, let me look in the mirror and say, okay, am I doing everything that I need to do to get to that level? And if you're not working out on your own, on top of, you know, going to your trainer, on top of, you know, figuring out what coach wants and knowing the plays inside and out, really studying the game, then you're going to fall short of whatever that goal is for yourself. So I think that's truly important for players at every level, you know, to be able to look at it and say, okay, am I preparing myself? Am I diligent in what I'm doing? You know, to have the not only skill sets, but overall the attributes, you know, because, you know, again, I talk about my daughter. She's 5'5". You know, I can find 5'5 anywhere, you know, I can go to Connecticut, Jersey, you know, Montana. So I was trying to say, like, what's going to be the differentiating factor for you? If we had a football field filled with players that were all 5'5", like, how would a coach just pick you from a crowd? And, you know, basically what's going to have to happen is you can't be, you know, subpar in anything. You have to, you know, attitude has to be, you know, top level. You know, your grades have to be top level. You know, your effort has to be top level. Your toughness, your confidence. You know, and then you start talking about your skill level and what you bring to the court. So, but if she falls short in any of those areas, then she's done, you know, because they can find somebody who has, you know, a 90 average compared to your 70 average, and then they'll have to worry about you being ineligible,
right?
You know, things like that. So, you know, I think that's for most players who aren't freak athletes, who aren't, you know, 6'9", 6'10", that are surefire, you know, you're looking at, you know, you have to make sure that each area is, you know, up there at the top. Otherwise, you know, again, you're shrinking your window, you know, that much shorter, that much smaller.
Yeah, that is some really, really good advice for the coaches, trainers, players, and parents. And I try to echo some of those same things to, especially to the players and parents that I interact with and work with and train. So, it's good to hear that, those same things coming from you. So on the youth level, what skills should the coaches and players really concentrate on that you feel that will benefit them more as they continue to go into the high school and those that are fortunate enough to get into the college level and beyond? What skills should those players and coaches really be concentrating on?
You know, at that level, I think it's going to go into your basics of passing, ball handling, shooting, right? And then, to me, being able to move a certain kind of way. You know, there's I talk about movement a lot because I feel like that's the end all of you know, any situation, whether it's you know, selling your pump fake, hitting the crossover, you know, things of that nature. So, you know, I think it's important for players to understand, you know, how their body moves and looks, you know, not only on the right side, but then on the left side. Can you jab right foot? Well, then let's see if you can jab left foot and make it look the same, you know, because you'll see a big difference, you know, for players that, you know, righties love to jab right, and then they start to put their whole foot down, and it looks awkward going left. So I said, you know, get in front of a mirror and see yourself, you know, and mimic the way the elbow comes down, mimic the way your body shifts. And I think once players get more and more comfortable with their overall movements, I think it makes a huge difference, especially for players that are trying to change positions, you know, trying to get a four-man that's trying to become a wing player, or a shooting guard that's trying to become a point guard. And there's certain attributes or things that, you know, coaches will look at, and it's all predicated on the movement, you know, because you can get, you know, the five all the way down to the one come on the court, and all of them can probably do a crossover, but only a few of them, you know, are going to look a certain way when they do it, you know, or step back or whatever. So I think it comes down to, you know, that eye test a lot of times for players, you know, when a coach is looking, he's got 3 or 4 minutes to evaluate talent on the basketball court. And I think that's what it comes down to a lot of times. And like I said, obviously shooting is at a premium right now in the NBA, you know, just the way, you know, Golden State has been playing. And, you know, you look at teams trying to spread the floor, I think it's, you know, super valuable if you can knock down a shot. You know, I don't care if it's off the dribble, catch and shoot, you know, just being able to you know, get to the free throw line and make your free throws. You know, that's just a valuable asset these days. And so I think players, you know, once they keep developing their overall skill sets, I think they have to look at it and say, okay, where do I see myself at the next level? How do I fit a specific role for my high school team or my middle school team? You know, what are they lacking in? And can I serve that? And then once you decide, all right, I can serve that, then you can branch out and expand your game even more, because now you're on the basketball court. You know, now you're able to, you know, be put in situations where you can show some of the other things you've been working on. But, you know, what people I got to understand is, like, if I go on, you know, San Antonio Spurs, I've got to be able to figure out, okay, well, they've got guys here that score. They've got guys here that could defend this, that, and third. I've got to figure out, what are they deficient in, or where's my strength lie that can help me at least garner a few minutes and then develop my repertoire from there. And I think that's what a guy like Kawhi Leonard's done so well. You know, he came in the league and he was more of a defensive guy, right? And obviously the two-time defensive player of the year, but, you know, now he's a legitimate threat, you know, pretty much everywhere, you know, and people didn't know he could shoot the way he does, you know. And I know we have Chad Forcier here now, who did a tremendous job with him, you know, getting his three-point shot, you know, at a really high clip, and he was one of the best percentage guys in the league last year. So it's just, you see guys that are able to each year, you know, add one thing or two things to their repertoire, and I think that's important for players, you know, to figure out. The other thing is just to figure out how to get to your spots, you know, where is, you know, your spot in the court that you like to make shots, and then what drills are you doing, and what skill sets, you know, what moves can get you to that spot, you know, so that even if the other team knows TJ likes to go, you know, right-hand dribble pull-up, they still can't stop it, you know. And so to me, that's a true definition of greatness is, you know, knowing what somebody's strength is and preparing to stop it, and you still can't. So, you know, I think once guys figure that out, you know, and they're actually okay with that, you know, I always tell my players, I said, if you can get 10 righty layups in a game and get yourself 20 points and do it, you know, and once they stop it, then you can give them something else. But, you know, I think too many times today, you know, players will make one move that's pretty basic, and then they go to something completely different, you know, just out of the blue. You know, I'm always a big proponent of, you know, just go at them with that same series until they stop it, and then from there you can hit them with a counter move, and then, you know, all the progressions and all the different counter moves that you have set up through your training will be there for you, you know, without you having to think about it. It's going to be there. But I think that's the biggest difference between players, the majority of them, who telegraph what they're going to do, and the better ones that actually choreograph what they're going to do. You know, they say, okay, I've got these in my bag, and they kind of have, they're still thinking steps ahead. But they're not going to go to those until, you know, you stop the initial. And so I think that's huge for young players to figure out. It's like, hey, I don't need all these different moves yet. You know, I'm going to show it when I need to. And then if I can score 25, 26 points on the most basic of plays, then at the end of the day, that's exciting to look at in the box score. You know, just because you hit, you know, a 360 layup and you ended up with 6 points, you know, in a game. You know, again, that doesn't look exciting on the box score, but some players are happy with that. You know, they had that one highlight clip, but at the end of the day, that's not going to get you to where you want to go.
Yeah. Yeah. I think sometimes I see a lot of players, especially younger players, they try to do the Euro step all the time. And that's one of the moves I think that sometimes players try to overuse. They try to have that flash or that highlight move, like you said, when they can just very easily just lay the ball up on the right side or the left side. But they want to come down and make that move to make it look good when they're actually making the move or making the shot more difficult because they're not making the correct read. It's just they're just coming down and just wanting to make that move. So, yeah, I see that a lot with a lot of young players. Coach, I got one more question for you.
Yep.
And if you can just kind of let the coaches and the players know, what is the mindset of the NBA players that you work with that's on the Magic when it comes to skill development? How serious do they take it? Kind of high intense are the players when they're doing it? How important it is to them? Just kind of give them a little insight on how the players take skill development at the NBA level.
Yeah, I think nowadays the NBA is getting younger and younger, and so I think a lot of the players that are coming in, you know, have already established training habits, you know, working with specific trainers. You know, so again, that's part of the mindset now of a player now is that their expectation is that they should be training or they're going to be behind the eight ball. So that to me is exciting, you know, and that gives me an opportunity now, especially before when I was working with players, I was just watching games, hoping that one player did well. Now I'm fortunate enough to be a coach and, you know, whatever training that I do, I need it to translate over again to them playing well, but for the team to overall, you know, have that success. And it's cool to be a part of the competitive side of things now as well. So I can, you know, tie in the player development with the coaching. And to me, it's been the best of both worlds. You know, it's been a good change for me. But I think these guys, like I said, they're into it. Just like anything else, you know, you've got a lot of different personalities. So I think it's important to understand, you know, what guys, you know, are looking to focus on, you know, what motivates them. You know, those are usually two of the questions, you know, I have, you know, and what their overall goal is for the upcoming season. And then from there, you know, try to devise a plan, you know, and a program based on, you know, what they want to work on, because I think that's important. I think it's very important to collaborate, especially, you know, with the NBA guys. And I even used to do it with the younger players to let them know that their input is important. And, you know, say, okay, I'm going to give you what you want. Now, if it's a starting center who's telling me they want to work on their handles, you know, so we'll give them, we'll throw some of those things in there, throw them a bone or two. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, you build up that trust level where they like it, they're feeling good about the workout, and then you give them what they need, you know. So I think it's very important to, you know, the most important thing to me about skill development is the relationship. And once people realize that, you know, you're in it for their best interest, you know, you usually have a lot more of their concentration and, you know, a lot more of their attention to detail to what you're trying to do, because they realize, okay, you know, Jay wants what's best for me. And I think that's been the most important factor, you know, for me coming into this situation is, again, having a background with everybody. I'm talking girls, boys, different age groups, good players, bad, you know, guys that weren't as skilled, and then, you know, different attitudes that were difficult, that weren't so difficult. So I feel like it's really prepared me for every type of, you know, person that you get. You're going to get the people that are going to try to overanalyze it. Well, why am I doing this? You know, almost every drill, you got the other guys that, you know, maybe are a little bit lazy or taking too long to get from drill to drill. You know, there's other guys that are super intense that you need to dial back, you know. So I think it's just understanding all the different types of personalities and all the different types of players that you're going to get when they train, you know, how they train and how you can, you know, kind of motivate them, or, you know, how you can talk to them to let them know, well, it's not just about today. You know, we're looking at, you know, what we have for a progression for next week, and, you know, the fact that it's a long season, you know, these are the areas that we need to hit, and this is the progression that I put together for you so that you're reaching your full potential, you know, by the time training camp hits and by the time the season hits. So, you know, so I, again, from what I've seen and the guys that are around the league that are doing player development and the coaches that are working with the players, it's super valuable, you know, because now from a management standpoint, they're looking at it saying, you know, these guys are getting better. They're guys that we can, you know, see do big things for our team. And then down the line, you know, they got value, because now if a guy can be traded, you know, for something else that we might need, you know, that adds value, you know. So I think, you know, our position in the NBA has definitely been elevated based on, you know, the youth movement of younger and younger guys coming in and you know, having to, you know, develop them quickly, not only from a standpoint of skill development, individual skill development, but overall how that incorporates into the team concept. So it's exciting. Like I said, it's exciting times for, you know, for skill development. It's exciting times for skill development, you know, at the younger levels, because basically, you know, but that foundation is going to be set. And, you know, those guys that are really trying to, from a training standpoint, get to the next level, whether that's trying to get to college or to the pros, I think it's important to let your body at work speak for itself. And that comes down from the way the guys are trained and what they're doing. And I know that was something that I didn't talk about before in the intro, but that's what helped me, you know, get to this level, was, you know, being able to work with a number of guys through our pre-draft process that were coming into Orlando, you know, because there was a number of years here that there was, you know, they had multiple lottery picks, and they would ask, one of the major questions they ask is, you know, so where are you spending your time? You know, who are you working with? And, you know, my name kept coming up, and, you know, fortunately for me, Tobias Harris was already here, and, you know, it was just one of those things that just, like, one thing led to another. And, you know, that to me is what I'm kind of, you know, very appreciative about, and I feel blessed, is, you know, that I was put in a good situation. And I always say, when you do things the right way, it takes longer to succeed, but it lasts longer when you do. And I think a lot of players, you know, a lot of players and coaches, they try to short the process. And, you know, like, from my standpoint, it's hard for me to give advice necessarily on, you know, the journey aspect of things, because I wasn't a guy that was going to Vegas and networking. I didn't hand in a resume to any of the NBA teams. You know, it just was something that, you know, they kind of found me through, you know, the work that was being put in. And I always told our players, everybody in our program, that it's a testament to, you know, everybody, because, you know, they looked at it not just as like a kids program, but they looked at it as a program, you know. And I think when you can do that, and you can get away from just, you know, age groups, or, you know, just trying to be, you know, one guy's guy, you know, I think you'll see that one thing leads to another. You know, all of a sudden a guy goes and he's a walk-on at a major university, and he's bringing, you know, his good friend or his roommate over, who happens to be a top 10 pick, you know, in the next year's draft or the year after. Yeah. You know, it's just weird, crazy how those things happen, right? But it's, if you do right by everybody, you'll see the benefits, not only professionally, but I just think relationship-wise. You know, I still stay in constant contact with all of my players. I mean, I get text messages and just people hitting me up a lot about not only basketball, but can I use you as a reference for this or that? And to me, that's exciting, you know, to, you know, 10 years from now, have, you know, a bunch of my players now that are lawyers or director of marketing in different places, and you start to see the success factor, and they equate a lot of that with, you know, the time that they spent with you as a trainer, and it goes way beyond basketball. So that's the coolest thing about what we do.
Yeah, building those relationships and getting to know people, because I know basketball has allowed me to meet a lot of people and spend time with people that I probably never would have got a chance to meet or interact with.
Right.
But, you know, it's a wonderful thing. Mark Adams, which is a trainer out of North Carolina, he's always talking about how the ball has magic, and it can take you different places, and you can meet different people and build relationships. And so it's a wonderful thing. I love what I do, and just from talking with you, and I know this is something that you love and passionate about. And when you have trainers like that, that's really passionate about it and doing things the right way, it makes the game so much better, so much more fun. So, I appreciate you. I appreciate
you said that. You know, the fun part is not that, I'm sorry about that, but the fun part to me is it's got to be grade A number one. You know, I think a lot of times when people are training and everything is so serious all the time, you lose that aspect of it. And that's the one thing that, even, you know, a couple years now into the NBA, I still, you know, try to pinch myself. I try to say, you know what, this is, how good do you have it? This is really cool. You know, getting to come into the arena every day, go see games, and you know, how many people would die to be like courtside to go get to watch some of the best players in the world? And I think, you know, that's the aspect that most people end up getting jaded over the course of time. And, you know, sometimes you need a reminder or a refresher, but for trainers and players, you know, I think it's very important for them to have that fun, to have that interaction, and enjoy the process.
Yeah, enjoying the process. Well, Coach, man, I really, really appreciate you coming on here and sharing a lot of your knowledge that you gave us and, you know, and giving us your time, because I know time is real valuable, and I know that you guys have a busy summer, and you got a lot of things that you could be doing. So to take a little bit of your time to share some of your expertise is means a lot, and we truly appreciate it.
Like I said, I appreciate it.
So if you know, if there's anybody out there that want to follow you on social media or interact with you on social media, where can they find you at?
Yeah, they can find me. It's at Rep Your Work. So REP, Your Work, Rep Your Work, on Twitter or Instagram. And, you know, on there, you know, usually I try to put a couple of things, you know, here and there about not only my life, you know, because I think it's important to be balanced. So it's not all basketball. You know, I know a lot of some trainers, you know, they put basketball every day. I like to mix it up and, you know, kind of share my overall experience of some of the places that we're at. You know, times that I've had, and then, you know, incorporate a couple of drills, you know, in there as well, you know, for people to have, and just little nuggets for them to take with them and challenge themselves and have some fun with. So, yeah, if there's anybody that's out there that's looking to, you know, see what it's like and what I have going here, they could definitely follow me on Twitter or Instagram. That'd be great.
Well, that was it. That was the interview that I did with Coach Jay Hernandez of the Charlotte Hornets. At the time when I interviewed him, he was the assistant coach for the Orlando Magic, and just been able to take some time out to visit with me and share some really great information and give some great knowledge and some insight of kind of what he does, and his philosophy is very, very valuable. So I hope everybody that was listening got some good notes. I know this episode's a little bit longer than I typically try to keep it, but hey, I think it was worth it. But before I let y'all go, I just want to remind y'all, be sure to follow me on social media, on Twitter and Instagram. My handle is at NBNBball. On LinkedIn and Snapchat, it's Coach TJ Jones. On Facebook, if you're interested in liking my Facebook page, it's NBN Basketball. Also on YouTube, I have some videos and some different content on YouTube. Be sure to search Nothing But Net B-Ball. On YouTube, it's Nothing But Net B-Ball. Also, my website, nbnbball.com. That's nbnbball.com. All of my podcast episodes are on my website. And what I've actually done is when you go to my homepage, when you type in nbnbball.com, my podcast page is now my home page. So when you click on it, all of my podcast episodes are right there. So the latest episode, of course, is going to be at the top left. You can click on it, or you can just go through and see any of the interviews I've done in the past, any of the episodes you might have missed. So be sure to go to my website, and you can hear all of my podcasts I've done. And speaking of my podcast, be sure to subscribe to our show and just share it with the people in your circle of influence. But also, I really, 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 really appreciate a 5-star review on iTunes. That's where more people can hear about the show. But we can also be found on Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. And as more people starting to listen, I appreciate that. I appreciate y'all. Sharing on Twitter, you know, retweeting some tweets that I have, because I wanted more and more people to know about the show and listen to it. And so I appreciate it. And also one last thing before you go, make sure to check out my latest blog. My latest blog is 5 tips on how to persevere. 5 tips on how to persevere. So when you go to my website, it's available at my website, nbnbball.com. Just click on where it says Skill Development Playbook at the top of the page, and then select blog. And once you select blog, it'll be the first blog entry at the top left of the page. So go to nbnbball.com, select Skill Development Playbook, select blog, and then my latest blog would be at the top left corner, and that's 5 tips on how to persevere. Well, I appreciate y'all, and until next time, thank you. God bless. Welcome, everybody, to the Skill Development Playbook Podcast. I am your host, Coach TJ. This is Season 3, Episode number 18. And today we're going to talk about seven shots every player should master. That's seven shots every player should master. When I'm working with players and we talk about shooting, I always share with them these seven shots that I feel like they need to master. So typically when I'm working with a kid, I always ask them what is the most fun part of basketball. And for the majority of the answers I get, they say shooting. And every once in a while, I get some different things. Some players like dribbling, some like passing. And the ones that really can't play offense, they typically say defense is the part that they enjoy the most. But most people that play basketball, most kids that participate, they like to shoot the ball. But it also depends on their confidence. But anyway, a lot of times when I ask kids what is the most fun part of basketball, they tell me shooting. And then I follow that up with a question and say, okay, well, what if you are 0 for 10 from the field? Or if you shoot 8 or 9 times and you only make one shot, I say, is shooting still fun? And then they look at me and they say, oh, well, I guess the most fun part is making shots. And that is. Everybody can shoot, but really for you to really enjoy, you have to be able to make some shots. So to me, the most fun part, and what I try to get them to understand the most fun part, is making shots. A lot of players love Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green and Damian Lillard and players like that that can, you know, really put the ball in the basket. And they wouldn't like those players if they couldn't shoot, if they couldn't make shots, I should say. So to me, the most fun part of playing basketball is making shots. So I say that to say that I try to tell players, you want to be a consistently good shooter. A consistently good shooter. And in order to do that, it takes two things. Number one, you have to have proper form and technique. And I won't get into what exactly is proper form technique. I'm not going to get into how your feet are supposed to be, whether it's square to the rim or at an angle, or if you're supposed to jump straight up, straight down, or sway. And all these different people have different techniques and philosophies. Won't get into all that. But I do know you have to have proper form and technique, and you have to get in reps, reps upon reps upon reps. And the thing about reps is you can actually have your block shooting where you're consistently shooting the same shot over and over again, where you're standing in the corner, catch and shoot 10 times, go to the wing, catch and shoot 10 times, go to the elbow, catch and shoot 10 times. Or it could be a shot off the dribble, or a shot off a screen, or whatever it could be. And you're just doing that same technique over and over again. So, you know, and you're going to see some improvement, but that doesn't guarantee that it's going to transfer over to a game, which is something else I could talk about, but we won't get into that today either. So I just know that you got to have good form and technique, and you got to get in the reps. You got to put in the time to be a consistently good shooter. And when I say consistently good shooter, what I mean by that is if I asked a player of mine to come in on any given day and shoot 10 shots from the elbow or the wing or the corner, can you consistently make 6 or 7 shots? Okay. Can you consistently make 6 or 7 shots? And I'm talking about the average, you know, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, maybe even a high school kid. Can you come in on a consistent basis on any given day and make 6 or 7 shots? Okay. And I think if you do that, then you're a consistently good shooter. And but then also at the same time, those 7 shots that you make out of 10, and that's out of 10, not just shooting till you make 7, but out of 10, can you consistently make that shot when you're open in a game? Okay. And then you're known as a consistently good shooter. So I tell players this all the time. You want to be such a good shooter that when you go into the gym, to play basketball with your friends or whatever, they don't want you to warm up. That's how good of a shooter you are. You want to be. And when you go into a gym and you're going to play and you're getting ready to, hey, guys, let me get a couple shots to warm up. Let's say you walk in right before they got ready to play. And the players that you're playing against are like, nah, don't let them shoot. Don't let them shoot. That tells me that you're a good shooter. And not only do you know it, but your peers know. Okay. All right. So let's get into it. I'm not going to keep y'all long. We're going to try to make this thing short. But let's get right into it. These are seven shots every player should master. And I will say this one more thing before I really get into this. The game of basketball has really changed over the last 20 to 25 years. Over the holiday break, over the Thanksgiving break, I got a chance to catch up with a friend of mine from high school. We played high school ball together, and we were just talking about how the game has changed so much, how bigs are now asked to handle the ball more and shoot more shots from the perimeter. And, you know, it's more positionless. And we kind of have a little bit of a different thought process or philosophy on today's game. He's a bit more old school than I am. I enjoy today's game. I'm accepting it a little bit more. But he's a little bit more, little bit more old school. There's nothing wrong with that. And that's the thing. Basketball can be played in so many different ways. But I know that some of these shots that I'm going to talk about today, you wouldn't dare have a big do 25 years ago. But now in today's game, you can have guards and bigs work on the same skills. You know, of course, there are going to be some things that a big is going to be required to do a little bit more of than your guards. But in different areas of the game, and they're going to be certain things that a guard is going to be able to excel a little bit better than a big. But, you know, right now is, you know, everybody's doing the same skills. So I think that's something that's very interesting about how the game has evolved. All right. So let's get into this real quick. Seven shots every player should master. Number one is catch and shoot or spot up jump shots. Catch and shoot or spot up jump shots. Okay. Now, I heard something very interesting, and I can't tell you, I'm not trying to take credit for this. I'm not sure exactly where I heard it. I believe it was on another podcast, and they were talking about how so many NBA players, some of the role players, they get a lot of their shots off of spot ups. You know, and so what happens is a player would drive, and there's a kick, there's a closeout on the initial kick. And then there's that extra pass. And then that player is typically already stationary, already spotted up, and they can catch and shoot. Now, again, this kind of goes into block shooting to work on spot up shooting or catch and shoot. And when I say catch and shoot, I know there's different ways you can catch and shoot, but I'm talking about you're in a stationary position. You're waiting on the ball to come to you, catching and you're shooting. You're going to do a lot of block shooting, and where you're going to go 10 shots from the corner, 10 shots from the wing, 10 shots from the elbow, you know, 10 shots front rim. And then on the other side of those same positions I just mentioned, elbow, wing, and corner. So you're going to get those. And I think if you ever, and here's a tip for any players that's out there, when you are learning or enhancing your skill when it comes to shooting, whether you're improving your form or whether you're just really honing in on your technique, you're going to have to get in some reps. You're going to have to get in some catch and shoot to make sure that you're shooting the ball the correct way. So there's nothing wrong with block shooting. There's nothing wrong with standing in one spot and shooting 10 or making 10 or making 5 or shooting 5. Just know you don't want to do that too much all the time. That's not the only way that you want to shoot. And I have a lot of kids that I work with that come to me, and I could tell right away how they work on shooting, because it's usually stand in one spot, somebody throws it to them, and then they shoot. They don't do any other kind of shooting. which is actually a mistake. So 7 shots every player should master. Number 1 is catch and shoot. So if you're a guard, you want to be able to catch it off the swing. If you're a post player, it could be the same thing. It could be a pick and pop. All right. But you want to be able to catch and shoot the basketball. Okay. All right. Number 2, 7 shots every player should master. Number 2 is on the move or off penetration. On the move or off penetration. So if you are a guard if you're a wing and there's penetration, you know, if there's somebody driving baseline and you're on a weak side wing, then you're going to have to drift down to the corner. So that's a shot that you're going to have to work on, drifting to the corner. And also, if you're in the corner and there's penetration, you're going to have to lift. You know, so just being able to move off of penetration to different parts of the floor, being able to be ready to catch and shoot. Okay. So you and one way to do that is if you're a player, the basic type of movements off penetration is, you know, wing to corner, and then you can do corner to wing. So just kind of thinking about different ways that the ball, there could be penetration with the ball and how you can move in relation to that penetration. Now, if you're a post player, if you ever get caught on the block and there's penetration, you have to know where to go. So I said post player, but it's not just for post players. So if you're on the block for whatever reason and there's penetration middle, then you know you need to flatten out to the short corner. If you're on the block and there's penetration baseline, you know, you could come up, you can make an eye cut up to the elbow, or you could go front rim. Okay, just kind of depends on, you know, the person that's down there, their ability, their skill. But you have to know where to move on penetration. Now, the reason why I say it's not just for post players is because if a guard penetrates, if I penetrate to the middle of the floor, okay, and I pass it out to the wing, opposite to the weak side wing, and I continue my cut. Let's say I end up right around the block area and there's penetration. If there's another penetration off the closeout, I got to know where to relocate. I can't just occupy that space because of spacing. I could clog up the spacing and then we can have some extra defenders that we don't need there. So we have to know where to relocate. So it's not just for post players when there's penetration. As a guard, when you drive and you kick, you're going to have to know where to exit. Okay. All right. So 7 shots every player should master. Number 1 is catch and shoot. Number 2 is on the move. Number 3 is out of transition. Teams are getting it. They're playing faster. If you look at the NBA and the pace of the game, as many points teams are scoring now, these guys are getting it and going. You're seeing it more in college too. When a team score, they're not throwing the ball to the point guard, and the point guard is, you know, quote unquote, walking it up the court. These guys are getting it out, and they're going quick, and they're really playing at a high pace, and they're really playing quickly, a lot quicker. So if you are a big, if you are a wing, or if you are a ball handler, you have to be able to shoot out of transition. Running the floor wide, getting to your spots, catching and shooting. If you're a big, get into your spot. So it's a lot of different things that you can do out of transition, but you want to be able to shoot the basketball off of this. And if you're in high school, middle school, college, or any level, think about your secondary fast break. Where could you get your shots? What type of actions do you perform? And then you can work on those out of transition. All right, number 4. Off screens, and we're going to talk about the person that's receiving the screen right first. So if you are receiving a screen and you have to think about having a hard curl to the basket, a hard curl to your spot, whether it's the elbow or the wing, do you fade? Do you pop? You know, all these different things that you could do off of a screen to get your shot. So you would think about those, do them from different areas, different spots on the floor. It could be a down screen. It could be a flare. You know, it could be a wide pin down. Just different screens that you can receive to be able to get into your shot. So you want to be able to shoot off screens. Now, if you're a big, I got to quit saying that, not necessarily big, but if you are setting the screen, you also have to be able to shoot off of setting that screen. So if I'm setting the screen, a general rule is one player to the basket, one player to the perimeter. Okay. It's just a general rule. That's not saying that you have to do that, but that's just a general rule. One player to the basket, one player to the rim. I'm sorry, one player to the basket or rim, one player to the perimeter. So if I'm setting a wide pin down, and that player comes off and they go hard to the wing or to the elbow or wherever they're going, I want to go now to the basket. Okay. Typically, that's something you want to think about. It doesn't mean you have to. That's the rule and you have to do that. But it's just something for you to think about. It's just something for you to think about. Okay. But that's all going to come down to what it is that your coach wants you to do. But being able to do that and understand that will help you. Okay. All right. 7 shots every player should master. Number 1, catch and shoot. Number 2, on the move. Number 3, transition. Number 4, off of screens. Number 5 is off the dribble. Everybody should be able to shoot off the dribble nowadays. Everybody. Okay. And when I say off the dribble, typically first thing that comes to mind is somebody thinks, oh, you got to be able to come down, go in and out, cross, double behind the back, step back, hezzy, cross over into a pull-up. No, that's not what I'm talking about. When I say everybody should be able to shoot off the dribble, whether you're a big, a wing, or a point guard, you have to be able, I feel like the 2 shots that you have to be able to master off the dribble is a 1 and 2 dribble pull-up. If you guys go back, if anybody go back and look at Michael Jordan's highlights, he scored a lot in the mid-range, either off a post or off of 1 and 2 dribble pull-ups. That's what he did. A lot of them. Yeah, I was on Instagram the other day, and I follow this account. I think it's called Old School B-Ball. Or Old School Basketball, and it shows a lot of old highlights of different players back from the 90s. And they were showing MJ. It showed a couple of clips of MJ. And a player was guarding him. He had it. When he got ready to attack, hard 2 dribbles to the right, pull up, bucket. MJ will go hard 2 dribbles to the left, pull up, bucket. And Kobe did the same thing. You know, Kobe copied MJ's game, but you know, there's nothing wrong with that. but you know, one hard dribble, 2 hard dribbles, pull up. I think that's something that you have to master, even if you are a big. You know, you pick, you pop, that guard throws it back to you. There's a hard closeout. You're gonna have to be able to take a 1 or 2 dribble pull up. And nowadays, that 1 dribble pull-up can be a sidestep for a 3-pointer. But you have to be able to get some type of separation off of a closeout to where you can get into your shot. Okay? So, off the dribble. And again, off the dribble may be coming off a screen, running through the catch, taking 1 dribble, pulling up, shoot. It doesn't mean you have to make all these different dribble moves, these fancy moves, to get your shot off. Okay? But you want to be able to shoot off the dribble. All right, number 6, 7 shots every player should master. Number 6, in the lane or at the rim. If you're a guard, you have to be able to finish in the lane off of 1 foot or off of 2 feet and over a big or over a rotational defender. So you have to be able to attack. You have to be able to get into the lane. You're going to have to be able to finish in traffic over bigger defenders. And you're going to be able to, you have to be able to finish at different speeds. I was telling a guy that's just last night, just yesterday, was at the gym. We were working on some stuff, and he was doing some one-on-one. And he never changed, and that's something he's been struggling with, is changing speeds. You know, he feels like everything has to be 100 miles an hour. But anyway, he'd get into the lane, and he wouldn't score at different speeds, different pace. He wouldn't change up his pace, and he would miss some of his shots. So, as a guard, especially a smaller guard, you have to be able to finish at the rim at different pace and different speeds. If you're a big or a wing, sometimes you got to finish above the rim. You know, can you take it up strong and dunk it on a player or two? You know, can you get to the rim and play through contact? So you have to be able to finish at the rim or in the lane. And I know that's not a particular shot, I guess you can say a jump shot, but when you're in the lane, you want to be able to finish, okay? And then the last one, number 7, is free throws. Free throws. I typically believe as a point guard, you want to shoot. I like for my point guards to shoot 80% or above. You know, at that point, I think if you're shooting 80%, you're really confident in your abilities. You know, you're going to have the ball a lot. It's going to be late in the game. You're going to make some decisions. excuse me. And so you want to shoot at a high clip to keep the other team from wanting to foul you. But then at the same time, you want to be able to keep that ball so you can go to the line and make free throws. But you want to be able to make your free throws. You want to make them at a high percentage. You know, and that's the easy way to get your points up. You know, if we want to talk about scoring average. But being able to make free throws. Now, these 7 shots that I just gave you, some of these shots can go together. Okay, so you may combine 2 or 3 of these shots in a drill. So, for example, you may say, okay, I'm going to work on transition shooting. So it may be where you sprint from half court to the wing, catch and shoot a 3. But then the next time you may start at half court and you may sprint to the wing underneath the basket, pause for a second, and then come off of simulate a stagger screen for a catch and shoot 3. Then the next time you may do the same thing, but when you come off the stagger, you may catch it and get into a 1 dribble pull up. Then the next time you may do the same thing, but this time instead of shooting a 1 dribble pull up, you may take 2 dribbles, get into the lane, and finish with some type of shot at the rim. So you can change these up. You can integrate them, you know, different skills or different shots into a different type of drill. It's a lot of different things that you can do with these 7, but I think these are the 7 that you need. Okay. Now, these shots can be inside the 3-point line or they can be outside the 3-point line. And it just depends on what you want to do and what it is that you're trying to accomplish. But again, let's go over these one more time. 7 shots every player should master. Number 1 is catch and shoot. Number 2, on the move. Number 3 is out of transition. Number 4 is off screens. Number 5 is off the dribble. Number 6 is in the lane or at the rim. And number 7 is free throws. So that is it. So before I let you guys go, let me mention a few things to you. Number 1, social media. Be sure to follow me on Twitter and Instagram. My handle is at NBNBball. And on Twitter, I really try to give out some really good information, you know, and not all of it is mine. I feel like, you know, since I'm in the skill development, you know, I'm not afraid to share and give from other great coaches or some great information that I see. So I really try to put out some really good info. So be sure to follow me on Twitter. And I love engaging in conversation about basketball. So that's a great, great way to do that with me. So I'm always looking to chat and talk and discuss different things on basketball, specifically with skill development. So y'all be sure to follow me on Twitter or Instagram at NBNBball. I'm also on LinkedIn and Snapchat. It's Coach TJ Jones. On YouTube, y'all be sure to follow me on YouTube. It's Nothing But Net B-Ball. My YouTube page is Nothing But Net B-Ball. Also, this podcast can be heard on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and a lot of other platforms. So I need y'all to be sure to subscribe. And also, if you're on Apple Podcasts, please give me a 5-star rating and leave me a review. I really want to get this podcast out to as many ears as possible. I've been looking at my stats. I'm slowly starting to grow, so I appreciate it. If you listen to the episode and you like it, you know, put it out there. You know, share it through whatever social media platform that you have. Let people know that you're listening. If you have questions, the best way to contact me is through email. If you have a specific question, something that's going to need a lot of feedback, email me at CoachTJ@NBNBball. CoachTJ@NBNBball. You know, and you can send me a message or send me an email and I get back to you. And if it's just, you know, something real short and quick, you know, if you're on one of the social media platforms, be sure to go ahead and send me a DM on those platforms. So that is it for today. I appreciate everybody for listening. You know, there are a lot of different, you know, podcasts. And as far as I know, again, this is the only podcast you can listen to on skill development. Only podcast you can listen to on skill development. So I appreciate y'all taking the time to listen. And until next week, God bless.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.